A podcast of the cinema.
Welcome to all of you listeners. It's a
are you like a robot today?
I feel like
bleep blorp.
Listen, here's the problem. I'm a little warmish.
It's getting there, yeah.
I'm feeling a little overheated. And that is because it's like 88 degrees outside this afternoon.
Oh, horrors.
In Los Angeles, and I'm quite delicate. I've mentioned that before.
It's true.
My name is Dave White. I'm a film critic for the rap sometimes. Sometimes for the radio on KCRW. Sometimes here. Mostly here.
Sometimes.
We regularly here.
Sometimes at cocktail parties.
Regularly on the KCRW.
Yeah.
And a couple times a month on the rap.
Yes.
In writing.
Yes. I'm Alonzo Duraldi. I'm film reviews editor at The Wrap. I review movies and recap TV shows over at What the Flick on the Young Turks Network on YouTube. And this week...
I have a bone to pick with you.
Oh, do you?
Yes.
What's that bone?
Tell them what you did this week, and I'm going to tell everybody about the bone I have to pick with you.
Fine. This week, I had the great good fortune to be invited on the Pop Rocket podcast, which is a show that you and I both like a lot.
Let me tell you something. I love Pop Rocket so much. I've been a huge fan for months and months and months. At least the past year and a half, I've been listening to Pop Rocket.
And now I've gone and ruined it?
And now, no. The fusion of the person I love the most in the world and Pop Rocket are together. This makes me very happy. When I say I love him most in the world, it is because we are married to each other. That's the other thing, if you're a new listener.
Yes. Surprise. What's your bone?
Okay. Well, tell me how about your experience, and then I will tell you why you did everything wrong.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, so I went to their studio, which is downtown-ish, right by MacArthur Park.
Yes.
In this cool old building, and everybody was very nice. I had a lovely time getting to meet Winter Mitchell and Margaret Wappler and Karen Tongson, who are all very funny. And
Branham was not around.
Mr. Branham was not there. He's got always many fish to fry.
He's got a lot of things going on. I follow him on Twitter.
Yeah.
He's always very funny and smart on Twitter.
You know, he just...
And on Pop Rocket and on Talk Show the Game Show.
He just wrapped that. I think he's now writing on Mindy Project.
Oh, so I don't know. I don't know what else.
He's got things happening.
I'm a fan.
He was not there this week, so yeah. I guess I was the substitute,
gay.
You know, husky homosexual. But we talked about summer movies, and it was fun. I had a good time. What did I do all wrong? Tell me.
You did not tell the Pop Rocket audience what your true cinematic film reviewing identity is. All you said was, I write for The Wrap, which is... accurate.
Yes.
You do write for The Wrap. But then later in the show, they asked you if you were going to see something.
If I had seen The Circle.
Some cruddy upcoming movie or some other movie that was no good. And you said, I'd send my New York guy to that.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah. They asked me about, we were talking about The Circle.
And I said, that sentence, I'll send my New York guy to that, doesn't make any sense in the context of you saying, I write for The Wrap, because it's not just that you write for The Wrap. You are the review editor.
Okay,
you're the reviews editor of The Wrap, and by being modest and not trying to sound like you were all big.
Yeah, exactly.
You ultimately made no sense.
Okay. For one thing,
yes.
Nobody gave it that much thought as you did, I'm sure. And if they did, then they realized, okay, so obviously, in addition to writing, he assigns. That is implicit.
The king of.
But for me to walk in and in the first 5 minutes be like, I'm the film reviews editor, bow before me. Like, that's just stupid. That's why would I do that? That's not how I introduce myself to people.
If I were the film reviews editor of anything, I would say bow before me to everyone.
Well, I'm not
everyone.
You.
Maybe everyone would bow before me.
Maybe that's why they invited me and not you.
They invited you because you're the guy who does all the things. I'm the guy who stays home and bakes you birthday cakes.
And you do all the things too. You just do them in different capacities.
I do.
Please.
And
you made me a birthday cake.
So there are not a lot of movies
that we saw
opening this week.
There were a few. We just didn't see, everything, and we didn't see
Everything, Everything is the name of a
everything,
film.
Everything is the name of a film.
All right.
Yes. And we didn't see some other stuff, too.
So. You have already seen The Commune or have not yet seen
not.
The Commune?
I need to. I have a screener this week got away from me because of all the things.
Are you going to? Yes, the things. Are you a subscriber on Patreon? We'll talk about that at the end of the show. Our weekly, pitch for that. But if you are and you're missing, LKTV and perhaps Linoleum Nights, that is because Alonso Duralde leaves first thing, crack of the morning, right before the sun goes up, to Atlanta. You're going to Atlanta for 5 days for a work project.
Correct.
We cannot tell you what that work project is yet.
Nope. But we will when
we
can.
But we will. It's very exciting, and we're very happy about it.
Yes.
But it is a secret. Meanwhile, because of that, you have not seen The Commune. Will you be taking your DVD screener with you, or can I watch it?
No, you can watch it. I'll deal with it later.
All right.
And by the
that's
way,
what I will do.
If you want to see The Commune, if you are a fan of Thomas Vinterberg, the guy who directed...
who isn't?
The Celebration.
The Celebration.
Did he also do The Hunt?
He did.
Okay.
Also, he did that adaptation of Far From the Madding Crowd.
Oh, right.
You didn't like so much, but yes. That I did.
Yeah, I was not super
had that,
into that one.
That
anyway.
Attractive Matthias
Schoenaerts. He's a bit of all right. Anyway, if you want to see The Commune, which is his latest film, it is streaming. So if you live in the United States, you can see it wherever it is you live, even if you are not in a city where it is showing theatrically. So we will talk about it soon once we've seen the thing.
But there's Alien.
Alien Covenant.
Alien Covenant.
Alien 8? 9?
How many aliens is this?
There was Alien... Aliens.
Yeah.
Alien 3.
Yeah.
Alien Winona Ryder.
Right.
Alien Resurrection. Alien V Predator, and then another Alien V Predator.
I forgot about the V Predators.
Oh, yeah.
Those were garbage.
Yes, they were.
And remember how stoked we were for those? Remember how excited everybody was? Oh my God,
it's the Alien and the Predator.
The Alien is going to fight the Predator. And of course, obviously, the Alien. Win because yes. It's the most ruthless, horrifying thing in the world, in the universe. And but oh god, those were the most boring and
terrible
bad movies.
And then Prometheus, and then now this. So yeah, this is Alien 8.
This is the 8th Alien movie.
Yes.
Why don't you tell people what happens in this Alien movie?
Well,
since I'm going to be telling about what happens in the Lav Diaz film.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So we're now. After Prometheus, so we're still in prequel land.
Yes.
So it's like that ship in Passengers where everybody's asleep for a real long time to go colonize an off-world thing.
7 years.
Yes. Except that, oops, there's a space thing, storm.
They run into like an electrical storm, a surge.
Yeah.
A power surge.
With it that screws everything up. So the only...
And kills one of their... They're
we haven't gotten
crew.
Haven't gotten there yet.
Okay.
So there are two.
I'll shut up.
There are two consciousnesses on board. There's a computer mother, and there's Michael Fassbender, not as the Michael Fassbender from Prometheus, but another Michael Fassbender that is also one robot.
A different robot.
Yes. So between the two of them, they decide that because of the damage and the whatever, they have to wake up the crew of 8. And in doing so, one of the crew members' pod, like, catches fire, and the guy dies horribly in front of everybody, which is really terrible. And we come to find out that these eight, in addition to being the crew of the ship, all have sort of interpersonal connections that makes whether they live or die a big deal to at least one other person. And yes. So, of course, this being an alien movie, dying starts happening. Amongst the crew are Catherine Waterston from Inherent Vice.
Inherent Vice. The magnificent Inherent Vice.
Yeah, whatever. Billy Crudup and Carmen Ejogo and Damian Bashir and Danny McBride, Jussie Smollett and Amy Simetz and other people.
Other folks.
So, you know, good cast, good actors, but it's an alien movie, so you pretty much know what they're going to be doing and at what volume. They receive a distress call coming from a nearby planet that seems to be of human origin, and that planet would be would support human life, and so it would be easier than getting back into the scary pods and, you know, waking up 7 years later. So they decide to go check things out, and then they find things, and things start getting scary. This is the sequel to Prometheus, basically. It's Ridley Scott.
Yes.
And somebody suggested that, like, this was the film version of a Prometheus message board.
Can you explain what that person meant?
In other words, I think that the Ridley Scott seems to be making this movie for people that didn't like Prometheus, and specifically trying to avoid things that Prometheus did and do things that Prometheus didn't do.
All right.
As far as being an alien movie.
All right.
I didn't love Prometheus. I like this
one. I did.
You did.
Yeah.
I like this one.
And I don't care who doesn't like me for that. Don't at me.
That's a strong stance, Dave White.
I don't care.
You know, I like this one better when it's being a horror movie, when the monster is actually devouring people or about to devour people.
Yes.
Then it's tense and it's scary. The rest of it, I didn't really care. And I don't know that the movie really cares either. Like, Billy Crudup's character, there's a two or three lines early on about how he's a person of faith and how, you know, suddenly he's in charge.
He does say that. He does say faithy things. Frequently throughout the film.
I don't know about frequently, because he doesn't get into
specifics about how faithy he is.
No, or what that means or how that's supposed to resonate. And it's kind of like, you know, because Prometheus got very deep into God country.
Yes.
And this movie sort of flirts with it, but then it's like, yeah, now it's a monster movie. And it's like, if you're going to be a monster movie, be a monster movie, that's fine. But be a better monster movie. This one's an okay, pretty good monster movie, but it's, you know, if Ridley Scott is going to be all like, this is my franchise, I'm taking it back over because I did the first one when the first one is still great, then these should be better. And this sort of felt like kind of a waste of this really incredible cast that doesn't get much to do. They zip past a lot of things. There's a gay subplot in this film.
No,
but
there's not.
If you miss it at that, don't feel bad, because
there is not a gay subplot in this film.
It is perhaps presented even more in absentia than the one in the Independence Day sequel.
Yes. 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 I heard going in there was a gay couple among the crew.
Uh-huh.
For the life of me, I could not figure out which two people were supposed to be the gay couple.
Right.
I couldn't tell if it was supposed to be two men, two lesbians. I had no idea.
Yeah.
And I was paying attention and looking for clues.
Right.
And when somebody does something and someone else sort of gets upset and sort of holds them a little bit.
Yeah, that's it.
Like, that's what you're supposed to, you know, you're supposed to understand those two people as queer in that context. And then I learn, after I come home from the film, tell him what Tom said to you.
I say, our dear friend Tom Ford, who loves...
Not
the famous
not
one.
Not that Tom Ford.
Our Tom Ford. Loves spoilers, loves trailers, loves all the prelim
advanced,
of these movies.
Advanced information.
And so apparently for Alien Covenant, there were all these little kind of short films about, like, setting up the characters, setting up the story, setting up da-da-da-da-da. And it's like, no. I'm not doing the homework for you, marketing department. If it's not in the movie,
yeah,
I don't care. It doesn't affect my movie-going experience.
Right.
So apparently, if, like Tom Ford, you had watched all of the get-to-know-the-crew members of the Covenant and the blah, 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 pre-stuff on YouTube or wherever the hell it drops, then you would know that this was a thing. But in the film itself...
I should not have to lift a finger.
No, of course not. I agree. I'm not doing this work for you, movie.
I am not. You... am I... like, I bought a ticket to see a movie. I don't... if you have extra things that you want to tell me about your movie, I need you to hand me a little piece of paper at the box office like they did when Dune came out.
With the glossary.
Yes.
Well, I am reminded of that genius Michael Kors, who talked about how when it was one of the years of the finals of Project Runway,
right,
it was not immediately apparent what story this line was telling.
What's your color story?
What's your color story?
What's your collections? What is the story of your collection?
Exactly. What's the theme? Yeah. And the guy starts talking about, oh, well, it's meant to be blah, 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 blah. And it's like this, the whole thing that's just not in the clothes. And Michael Kors is like, you're not going to get to hand out, you know, a manifesto with this collection. The collection has to do the work.
I don't even mind a little manifesto because, as you know, I'm always very early for a movie.
So you have time.
I've got plenty of time to go to the bathroom, to validate my parking, get myself a bottle of water.
Hand me a thing that tells me which ending of Clue I'm about to see. You know, whatever.
So if you want to hand me the little manifesto, I'm chill with reading that. We can do it. And that's okay. But I don't want to have to follow your Instagram account or the Twitter that gives me all the advanced information. I don't want to have to spend my mornings ignoring internet pornography to watch your...
Snippets.
Thank you. That's what they are.
Yeah,
snippets.
If it was important, you should have left it in the movie.
Correct. Therefore, I would like for you right now to tell me, who is the gay couple in this movie? Who are they?
It's Demian Bashir.
Yes,
and the other one.
What other one?
The one who... Are we getting into spoiler territory now?
Just tell me who the dude is that's Demian Bashir's guy.
I think it's the blonde guy.
Blonde guy.
They're not like...
Are we talking about... Hang on.
They don't...
Alexander England? Tall?
Yes.
Beard with the ginger beard?
Mm-hmm.
I'm showing you the picture right now.
Yes.
He's pretty good looking.
He foin, as they say.
I don't know that I remember him saying any words in the film.
Well,
except like bleh,
yeah,
or you know, control panel XKE, you know. I don't,
it's not like they get a steamy shower scene together like two other crew members do.
Heterosexual crew members.
Yeah. So again, yeah, if you were not on the lookout that, oh yeah, Demian Bashir is your stealth gay,
but
in this
is
movie,
the guy Alexander England.
Yes, yeah.
Well, Now I have another question.
Okay.
On the snippets.
I don't know. I didn't watch the snippets.
Do they have a steamy shower scene in the snippets? Because if they do, if this hot dude is making out with Demian Bashir, who is also a hot dude, I'll go watch your snippet.
If that's happening, Tom Ford buried the lead. He did not mention the steamy shower action with those two. But yeah, I will chase your marketing down for that. Otherwise, don't waste my time.
All right.
Now, you said you weren't scared by this. I know you have a higher threshold
than
I do.
Nothing scares me except...
Take Me to the River.
Except... Take Me to the River did not scare me. Take Me to the River gave me a panic attack.
Ah, okay.
Which is an entirely different situation.
Fine.
Take Me to the River is a film that provokes...
anxiety.
Deep anxiety. Horror films only scare me when...
they're the strangers.
When it is a human being that is a psychotic person that has entered my home at night and is standing over my bed while I sleep, about to murder me.
Gotcha.
Okay. So that eliminates all monster-themed films. Mm-hmm. Monsters don't scare me. Here's why. There ain't no monsters. Demon movies, devil movies don't scare me. Here's why. There ain't no devils. This stuff, ghosts, there ain't no ghosts. If you think you have a ghost in your house and you want to find out how to determine if you have a ghost, here's the answer. You don't have a ghost.
But if you have ghosts, honey, freaky ghosts.
But, maybe. Yeah, well, but you know who you might have in your house? The Night Stalker. The Strangers.
Gotcha.
Charles Manson.
Right.
Them cats. They'll come in. They'll come to your house. They'll act out their little crimes, practicing them silently.
Their creepy crawls.
Downstairs while you sleep. They'll go to the kitchen. They'll make themselves sandwiches. They'll plan the killings. And then they'll come upstairs and hack you all into little bits. The end. That's a horror movie.
By the way, I was kind of proud of myself.
Yes.
I predicted last September that within the next 5 years,
yes,
somebody was going to cast Zac Efron as Ted Bundy.
And they just did.
And they just did.
Yes. And The Strangers, too, is fixing to get rolled.
Yes, with Christina Hendricks.
And so...
who will hopefully be less dumb than Liv Tyler was.
Well, you know what? Liv Tyler's character being dumb in that movie did not stop that movie from giving me nightmares.
Yes.
All right. Let's return to our discussion of Alien Covenant.
Yes. The aliens, I gotta say,
yes,
are creepy and gross and slimy.
They're perfect.
Yeah.
They're beautifully disgusting.
You see, there's like a bunch of different, you know, because if you've seen the movies over the years, you know, they manifest in slightly different forms or different, you know, like evolution levels, whatever. So you get a whole panoply of alien styles here.
Yeah.
And apparently a lot of them are practical, I was reading somewhere.
Oh, which yeah?
Nice. I will say to the film's testament, I couldn't tell you what's practical and what's CG.
Yep.
It all looks like it's right there and dripping acid in your face.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, so as a horror movie, when it's scary, it's scary. But in the in-between scary parts, I was like, yeah, I don't care. You're not giving me enough characters with these people to be concerned about who's the next flesh sack that's going to get, you know, violated. And their movie has a big sort of third act, ha-ha, that I was like, I totally saw coming half an hour away.
I didn't see it coming.
Wow.
I was heavily focused on my bag of medium popcorn and my red high C fruit punch splash.
Well, I think most people will see this thing coming and be sort of like, it's like when you were watching, everybody was watching HBO's Westworld and the internet figured out like 6 months beforehand that this character and this character were the same guy. And then when the show unveils, they're like, ha-ha! It's like, yeah, we're ahead of your show. Thanks.
Okay, so I thought that this film was beautifully production designed.
Oh, totally, yeah. The spaceship looked great.
Beautifully art directed. Everything looked just gleaming and gorgeous and, you know, the kind of space environment that I would think, okay, maybe I would go into space. I would be in this ship. It's beautiful.
But not in the way that the one in Passengers is, which is sort of designed to look like a floating resort.
Right.
This one is more
the
kind of...
The Passengers ship is even cooler and better. Yeah.
This one's a more sort of functional, almost military grade kind of thing, but it still looks amazing.
I appreciate Ridley Scott's sort of sober approach to this film.
Mm-hmm.
I like how dark and somber it is.
Hmm.
It's not wild and chaotic.
No.
I...
Shot by Darry Zvolsky, who also shot The Martian and the upcoming War Machine.
I was really loving, as you said, the creature design and the creature effects.
Mm-hmm.
And the times when the creatures are destroying people.
Yes.
There's nothing I like more in a monster movie when the monsters are... doing that and entering and exiting bodies through a variety of holes that are already there or that they invent they drill their own.
Choose their own adventure.
I would have liked more of that
because
I love body horror and gore.
Yeah.
I think it's glorious. And when this movie is doing that, it's thrilling.
Sure.
Overall, it was not scary to me because these films are never scary to me. I think the original Alien scared me in 1979, was it?
Yeah.
When I was 14 years old. That's about the last time a film scared me. That and Halloween and the early slasher films were when you didn't there when there was little precedent for what was about to happen in those films.
We weren't set in stone.
Yeah.
And you know, as much as I like Catherine Waterston in this, no one's Ripley, you know?
Well, yeah.
Like that's such a high bar that like
it is a very high bar.
They have not come up with another character and who
was
has that.
And was Sigourney Weaver the voice of the ship?
Oh, I have no idea.
Were you not hearing that right away?
It did not hit me, no.
It's not.
Oh, okay.
Someone named Lorelai King, who sounds just like Sigourney Weaver.
Sigourney Weaver was busy being the voice of Finding Dory.
Yeah. So, I enjoyed myself. It's not, I knew it wouldn't be frightening, and it wasn't. It's beautiful to look at. There's enough killing and disgusting stuff happening to keep someone like me happy.
Mm-hmm.
There is exciting fight stuff going on between humans and the monsters.
Mm-hmm.
As far as any larger considerations like, you know, creation and God and things like that.
Right.
Those are like little sprinkles on the outside of a piece of ice cream. Yeah, you know what I mean?
I don't care
about I don't either.
Larger mythos of this series.
Yeah, this franchise has never drawn me in for its ongoing narrative.
And like, you know, I know for a while there, particularly in the first couple, I'd say in the first four, like in the Sigourney Weaver movies, there is the feminist read about, yes, you know, childbirth and
yes,
you know, the body and yes, all that stuff. And that can be interesting, and it varies for me in interest level in those four movies.
I appreciated that stuff as it was happening.
Yeah.
But
it doesn't carry over into now.
I accepted new installments as just another chapter, not as, you know, the next step in a story that I was really clinging to and anticipating, what are they going to do next?
Well, that's the thing. If these stopped,
it wouldn't bother me.
It wouldn't bother me. No. I don't feel like I'm hanging on the edge.
If they keep going, I will enjoy them.
Yeah, fine. Yeah. If as long as they're interesting, you know. But and again, because this is a prequel, you kind of have a read for how it's going to end, you know.
Yes.
Weirdly enough, did you see Life?
Which one was that?
Earlier this year, the Jake Gyllenhaal one that was like Alien.
Oh, no, I didn't get around to that.
Weirdly enough, like, I think Life actually does its third act twist better than Alien Covenant did.
Oh, yeah.
For a movie that, and I will also give Life points for the idea of a spaceship that doesn't have gravity going on, so the people are sort of zipping around like they were swimming. You know what I mean?
Right.
Which is interesting because one of the characters in Life is actually paraplegic, but in space, you know, he can move himself around as well as anybody else can. So I'm thinking about Life in terms of Alien Covenant and liking it better in certain respects is a little disappointing. But overall, I mean, yeah, I gave it a red juicy tomato. But I was not super crazy. I was not wildly enthusiastic.
I'm sorry. A juicy red tomato.
Juicy red tomato.
That
sorry.
Is the quote. If you're going to quote Director X, quote him right.
Sorry. A juicy red tomato.
Juicy red tomato.
And not a green splat.
And not a green splat. Come on.
Forgive me.
What if Director X is listening?
Director X has never listened to this
program. He wants you to quote him properly.
And he probably never will. Anyway, you saw a film that is opening in New York this weekend.
It is opening in New York only this weekend. So, do you live in New York City? Do you have...
Get down to Lincoln Center.
Do you have 4 hours to spare? The new film from Filipino director Lav Diaz has opened. It's called The Woman Who Left...
Who is this woman, and where did she leave from?
She left from the joint.
Oh.
Yeah.
The big house.
So, this is a... I'm just going to tell y'all right off the bat, because there are people in the world, and I assume there are people who are listening to this show,
mm-hmm.
who, when you tell them the specifics of a film, not the plot, but, for example, the fact that it is not in English, it's in Tagalog.
Or that it is in black and white.
It is in black and white. Gorgeous. Oh, man. Gorgeous black and white. Like, stark, high contrast black and white that... black, so black, you think you're going to, like, be erased by it. Like, it's that black. Right?
I always differentiate between, like, there are movies that are in black and white, and there are movies that are not in color.
Correct. Correct. This movie is in black and white. I have a hand claps. Black and white. All right. I won't do any more hand claps. It is also 3 hours and 45 minutes long. Now, that bothers some people.
Yeah, it does.
I don't understand those people. Frankly, if you are bothered by duration, by a lack of English, a lack of color in a film, if you are not down for cinema in all the forms that it can take, then I don't understand you. So
I'm not defending them, but I don't know where they're coming from. I'm not saying you're wrong.
I do not. I actually do not know where they're coming from. I do not understand people who reject a thing because of its formal qualities.
These are people who go to the movies to be entertained.
Okay, and we don't live in the same world.
I understand that.
All right, I'm going to talk about this movie now.
You're being a jerk.
Are you trying to tell me that those folks have a leg to stand on
I'm not trying to defend them. I'm just saying you've known people like this all your life. You know
I have, and I don't get them.
Fine.
I don't get them. I do not. I don't understand why you would reject something for those reasons.
I'm not defending them. I'm just saying I know people like that, and they look at movies not as an art form, but as...
Well, they're wrong.
I know that. I'm not saying anything here that I'm trying to defend.
What are you getting at?
You are acting like you live in this ivory tower and you can't begin to conceive of people who behave like this.
I live in an ivory tower.
And you know what they're about. You don't like what they're about, and what they're about annoys you, but you know they're out there and you know why they're the way they are.
We're not friends.
Fair enough.
I cannot be friends.
You're related to people like this.
We're related. We're not friends.
Fair enough.
Not true friend. Family. I'm sorry. All right. So this is the movie you're about to be told about.
Okay.
3 hour and 45 minute black and white
Tagalog
film.
Based on a Tolstoy story.
Based on a Leo Tolstoy story called, God Sees All But Waits.
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. It is 1997, and a woman named Horacia is getting out of prison. She doesn't know she's about to get out of prison. She thinks she's there for life. She has been convicted of a murder that she did not commit. It turns out, though, that her best friend in prison is the actual murderess, and that the murderess was put up to the crime by Horacia's jilted ex-lover, a very rich and powerful man in the Philippines.
Okay, digression for a second.
Yes.
If there's murderess,
yes.
Why isn't there assassin?
There might have used to been.
Maybe. I've never heard
possibly.
That one.
Possibly.
But there should be assassin.
There should be.
Anyway, go on.
Assassinet.
In the bassinet.
I sure do love female suffixes on words. They're the best. Oh, and I know they're not feminist, but I just think they're glorious words.
I think it was Elaine Boozler who said, you never refer to like a doctorella.
Right. But wouldn't it be cool?
A lawyerina.
Yeah. All right. It turns out that she confesses. The best friend confesses. Mm-hmm. This is all happening in the first 10 minutes of the film. I've not spoiled a thing. She is immediately exonerated, released into a world that she has no idea how to function in.
Did you say she's been behind bars for 30 years?
30 years.
Yeah.
Behind bars, she was exactly the same person that she was before. She used to be a school teacher, so she spent her 30 years in prison teaching the other female inmates how to read and write and about history and about literature and, you know, all this stuff. She's a really lovely person. Now she wants revenge. So she sells everything she has. She has property. She sells it, gets a bunch of money, and goes off to where she thinks the ex lives. She finds him. Now, because this is a revenge story, ostensibly, you've got a lot of genre elements going on in the film. Furthermore, it's black and white, so that makes it a noir. And so much of the action in this film takes place at night. But this is a film from Lav Diaz, who is known for a couple of things.
Long-ass movies.
This is one of his shorter films.
Yeah, I know.
By the way,
a walk in the park.
Norte, The End of History, the last film that got a theatrical release from him in 2013 in the United States, is like 4.5 hours. He's had films as long as 6 and 8 hours. He is a convention-defying man. He loves to extend the story to, you know, marathon proportions. The other thing about Lav Diaz is that if you are an actor in his films and you're used to getting, you know, sweet-ass close-ups, you better go work with somebody else because you're going to be part of...
Masters.
You're going to be part of the frame. Your face is barely interesting to him. And if you got a face that you want to do something with, you better be doing it because you're just going to be one element in a lot of things happening on in the frame.
And he's working with like big
stars.
And
he's working in this particular film. This is an interesting thing that I'll talk about in a minute. He's working with big Filipino stars. So she goes to this place and she begins to stalk the ex. It turns out, because he is so rich, he is constantly under threat of being kidnapped. Now, one of the things you hear in the film is endless news reports about kidnappings. They're always on the background, on a TV or on the radio. The rich, the business class, tourists with money, they're all being kidnapped left and right. So he...
Amy Schumer and Goldie Hawn.
Amy Schumer and Goldie Hawn being snatched right out from under a resort. He is a prisoner in his own luxury home. He only leaves with bodyguards to go to church. And that is where she stalks him. She puts her lace head covering on.
Veil.
And she sits in church and watches him in church.
Does he know she's there?
He only thinks he recognizes her once, but she's gone.
Gotcha.
Most of the time, she is very incognito. So what she does for the next 3 hours of this film is wait for him and watch him and wrestle with her own ambivalence about revenge. Because the person she is, the person she knows herself to be, is the person that she, by default, just becomes out in the world. She begins collecting outcasts to take care of, very much like she did in prison. A woman who runs a roadside food stand that she, you know, helps out. A street vendor who sells those ballot eggs. Do you know what those are?
You told me.
They are so gross. Those are a thing that people eat in the Philippines, and I don't know where else they eat them, but they are duck eggs, where the embryo has been fertilized and the duck is kind of half formed. The baby duck is kind of half formed in the shell, and you cook it and you eat the whole thing. I watched Andrew Zimmern do this on whatever that weird food show was that he hosted a couple years back. I watched him eat one, and he was heaving, and I felt like doing that just from watching him do it. Gnarly. Anyway, this guy sells those eggs, and he has no customers.
Gee, I wonder why.
No. I mean, this is the thing that people eat.
No, I know.
Folks,
I know.
Eat this, okay? So she helps him. There's a homeless woman who is mentally ill and who is filthy and who runs around town screaming about everybody being a demon, which is symbolically
significant,
accurate in this film.
Yeah.
There is a family of like eight that lives in an open air shack, and she buys the ballot eggs and gives them to the family so they can have something to eat.
Jeez.
Yeah, the kids are like, yeah, thanks, lady.
So, could I get some Cocoa Puffs instead?
Most importantly, however, there is a young transgender woman who is in sort of desperate need of Horacia's mothering. She has come to this town herself intentionally because her family threw her out. And in the film, she's referred to as the homosexual, and they refer to him as he, but she lives as a woman. So this is a transgender woman. It's just that the characters in the film don't understand
the distinction therein.
Yeah, yeah. And so terrible things happen to the young transgender woman, and she has to be nursed back to health. And during this process, she says something that's very telling, and it's in keeping with what happens throughout the film. She says, I left my home to come here to be a stranger. I wanted to disappear. I didn't want anyone to know who I was. Now, that is a really, really significant biblical allusion.
Right.
And it is
the Good Samaritan, Sodom and Gomorrah, the stranger.
You are meant to take the stranger in and take care of the stranger.
Yeah.
So what you have here is a woman who is on a mission of vengeance, but who is also becoming a Christ figure, who is behaving as though she is the salvation of these broken people.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't tell you what happens, but there is. There is a kind of a resolution, and it's for me it was incredibly moving, and it is the kind of film that when I watch these garbagey Christian movies,
I was gonna say this is a good faith-based movie.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. When I watch those garbagey Christian movies, because I'm just fascinated by them.
Yeah.
I think, why don't y'all go be more like that old Lav Diaz over there?
That Robert Bresson.
This is a really, really good film. I would like, if you are listening to me, I would like for you to watch it. And if you don't, again, we cannot be friends.
So yeah, right.
That's a hard and fast rule.
Right now, it is just showing at Lincoln Center. It is going to be making its way around the country.
Well, we don't know.
To some extent.
I talked to the Kino distributor, the publicist at Kino, and he said they were hoping to get an L.A. booking. There is a situation in Los Angeles that I have heard about a few times.
Mm-hmm.
Asian art house. Unless it's like Wong Kar Wai.
Right. Or Ho Xiao Xian.
Not even Ho Xiao Xian, really. Ho Xiao Xian films will open in Los Angeles.
Yes.
But they won't stick around. You better go get it.
Yeah.
Wong Kar Wai films will open in Los Angeles and stick around a bit.
Sure.
But otherwise, Asian art house does not do well here, box office-wise. I don't know why.
Weird.
The art house audience in Los Angeles just does not show up for it. That's what I hear. It bums me out. because that's where some of the strongest, in my opinion, films are coming from.
There's a
of
lot
of the past 10 to 15 years.
There's a chunk of art house that opens in New York and doesn't come here. I mean, like anything from the Cinema Guild, you know.
Well, no, sometimes it does. Like, Cinema Guild stuff will open here. You know, we got a one-night Stray Dogs. We got 1 week of Leviathan. We got 2 weeks of Monokamana.
Yeah, I suppose.
You know, that kind of thing. It's disheartening, you know, for someone like me who lives for this stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're hunting for it, go find
In any event, this movie...
This is from Kino Lorber. It will be out on home video
eventually. What I was going to say is this movie is making its way around the country. Whether or not it opens here, I think there are other cities. Like, it'll probably play San Francisco.
Museums, you know, one-off nights. The guy from Kino said they were hoping to get, like, a one-off night at the Hammer.
Yeah.
The Hammer Museum or maybe Cinefamily, somebody like that.
Here. Yeah, like, I mean, you know, in Cinefamily, they have often, for this kind of thing, would build a retrospective around it.
Yes.
So that would be nice.
That could happen.
Yeah. Anyway, keep an eye out for The Woman Who Left.
The Woman Who Left. And going back to what you were talking about, the cast of stars, I love that he used big Philippine stars. The woman who plays the lead, her name is Charo Santos Concio. She has not acted in 15 years, but she got her start as an actress. And then just became a huge media mogul.
Yeah.
Like, one of the most powerful women in film and television production in the Philippines. She's a big, big deal. Everybody knows who she is. She hosts a TV show there. It's like an anthology kind of show.
She didn't have to do this, in other
words. No. And for her to play, you know, a person so on the margins. You know, this is a film about, a film where you're constantly hearing about the rich being kidnapped, but it is a movie about poor people who
are ignored,
vanish without a trace into the night, literally. And no one misses them. And again, like I said, so much of this takes place at night. The vendor, in my favorite line of the movie, he says to you, "What kind of angel are you?" You know, and then he says, "Are you Batman or are you the Aswang?" If you don't know what the Aswang is,
you're obsessed with the Aswang.
I am obsessed with the Aswang. A S W A N G. It's Filipino folklore.
It's like the Filipino chupacabra, but it's a dog that walks backwards.
It's a monster.
There's at least
a shape shifting monster.
There's like two or three different horror films called Aswang.
Yeah. And I have because of Linda Barry, I have long been obsessed with the Aswang. So, yeah, I love this movie. Go see it if you get a chance. You know, if you've never watched a 4-hour Filipino black and white movie,
start with this one.
Start with this one. It's not difficult to understand.
Okay.
I think that's one of the most important things I should say about it. Unlike the films of a person like Pichapong Wirasethakul, Wirasethakul goes off into abstraction.
Yes.
And you're forced at times to wonder what's happening. That is not the case.
This is straightforward.
This is a straightforward narrative. It just takes its time.
I look forward to seeing it.
Yeah.
What's your DVD pick this week?
Norte, The End of History from Lav Diaz, 2013.
Which is how long?
4 hours and a half. And it's kind of a retelling of Crime and Punishment. It's about three people. One of them is put in prison. The crime is pinned on him. Mm-hmm. He did not commit a murder. When he goes to prison, his wife has to take care of their kids, so they fall into, you know, extreme poverty and despair. Meanwhile, the guy who did commit the crime is out in the world, slowly being driven insane because of his guilt.
Okay.
It's a fun time. Let me tell you, it's a bummer, but it's magnificent.
Okay.
And I mean, magnificent.
All right. My DVD pick this week is The Martian, because Ridley Scott has still got it. the last couple of Alien movies do not necessarily, I think, show him at his strongest. But I think that The Martian is a real accomplishment. It is smart and it's funny and it is suspenseful. And could you not crumple paper when I'm talking, Mr. Rude?
Could I not? I could not, but I am. That's what I'm doing.
So anyway.
Sorry.
I think it's really terrific. And it's...
You know what I don't like about that movie?
What's that?
Jessica Chastain.
Really?
Has barely any sort of identity in that film.
Well, nobody really gets that much to do with, unless your name is Matt Damon.
Also, okay, you're right. You're right. I shouldn't get all bound up about that, I guess, maybe. Or maybe I should, always.
She works plenty.
Also, this movie. Don't worry about it. Also, this movie hates disco music, and that's stupid.
Okay, I agree with you on that, but you still get to hear the disco music, so that's the good part. But this is also a movie that really.
Sorry, I'm not crinkling paper. I'm sneezing now.
God, what else? What will you do to steal focus? It's always got to be about you.
Well, I mean.
Anyway, this is
you knew that when you married.
That's true. I love how unabashedly pro-science this movie is in an era when, like...
That is correct.
You know, we keep hearing about how, that global warming, it's a hoax. Although, did you see the thing I posted on Facebook? I said this is like a Twilight Zone story.
What?
They built this vault in, like, Greenland or something.
Yes.
It was like the Noah's Ark of plants. It was like all these seeds that they wanted to have preserved and kept forever. You know, of like all the different species and all these different plants and stuff.
Okay.
And it got flooded.
Oh, no.
Because the ice melted. So in an era like this, Michigas, that we're dealing with, I like a movie that's about science. So yay, The Martian. We have some letters.
All right. We do have letters. There's a lot of it. Can you pause it for a minute while I dig them up?
I can do that. And now the siren has gone to... When you were a kid, did you ever hear people call it a siren?
Yeah, because I'm from the South.
Same here.
I mean, I wasn't born in the South, but no. I got there real soon, so...
I just, for some reason, the siren popped into my head.
So here's from Carol. Carol Ann, I'm sorry. Carol Ann. Hey, Dave and Alonzo. I've written a few times with lists and whatnot, but it has been a while. However, in that time, I've still been listening and enjoying and recommending to friends, and this brings me to why I'm writing. A few weeks ago, I switched phones with my bestie, Skylar. We went nuts, subscribing to our favorite podcasts for each other.
Nice.
Of course, I put Linoleum Knife on his phone. Then a couple of days ago, he confessed to me he finally listened, but he doesn't like podcasts by straight white guys, and he almost unsubscribed. Huh? What?
Don't ask me. I didn't write this letter.
Okay, he doesn't like podcasts by straight white guys and almost unsubscribed. I mean, we are white guys.
Yes.
All right.
Two out of three ain't bad.
There was something... You're only about, like, 85% white.
Look, I'm totally...
With the Spain thing.
I am Euro-Hispanic. I'm not going to claim for any un-whiteness. It's all cool now, but I'm not going to pretend.
Listen, when I was growing up, I didn't have people asking hotel staff who that Mexican family was that thought they owned the place.
Yes, well, lucky us.
You did. You're at least 3% a person of color somehow, some way.
Well, you know what?
No, I'm sorry. It's not true. You're completely white.
I'm totally.
You're like milky.
I am.
Yeah.
I'm like half Basque,
you're like
for God's sake.
Pink. Okay. Then a couple of days he goes. I'm sorry. I'm rereading the sentence. Doy. However, there was something that made him continue.
So, okay.
Could it have been our charm?
So he assumed that
he thought we were straight.
He assumed we were straight white guys and he was going to not listen anymore. Okay.
Of course, he finally clued into the fact that you two are happily married to each other after the second episode.
Ah.
Now he is 100% in. Now, my question to you, is Skylar being sexist or reversed sexist? We have a serious bet going about this. Sexist.
Well, by not wanting to listen to podcasts by straight white guys?
No, that's fine. No one should listen to podcasts by straight guys. Ever.
I will say that I think...
I mean, we're white, so I can't say you shouldn't listen to podcasts by white people, because we're white, but We're queer.
I think it's fine. I think that straight white guy is kind of the default voice in our society.
Yeah, in most societies. Unfortunately, you're just going to get them whether you want them or not.
Most Western societies.
Sorry, bibs.
So I can understand if you have a limited amount of time for podcasts and you really want to open yourself up to differing viewpoints, that straight white guy might be the first thing to scratch off your list because you're trying to mix it up.
Right.
However, some of my best friends are straight white guys.
Yeah, mine too.
And some of my favorite podcasts are by straight white guys.
Name them.
The B-Movies podcast and Canceled Too Soon.
Canceled Too Soon, yes.
The Flophouse, straight white guys.
The Flophouse is fine. I don't need it, though.
All right.
I don't need it.
You know, if you on the days that John Lovett isn't there, Pod Save America is straight white guys.
They're all right. Yeah.
You know,
I'm okay with them.
Yeah, there are plenty, you know... our friend Kurt and the comics canon, that's straight white guys.
Is Skylar being sexist? Or, okay, is Skylar being
something
discriminatory?
Yes.
Is Skylar being discriminatory about heterosexual white men?
I guess.
Yes, but.
It's that thing about.
It's fine.
Yeah.
You just said it. You have limited time.
Yes.
And if you let it, dominant voice will take over.
If you want the straight white guy opinion about anything, it's not too hard to find.
You can throw a rock about 3 inches and find it.
Yeah. So, the answer is yes, but we'll allow it.
Yes. She says, be well. Oh, P.S. Inspired by you guys, I made Skylar start a podcast with me.
Oh, well, there you go.
It's called Finally Saw.
Oh, okay. I finally saw this movie.
And we talk about movies and TV shows we've been meaning to watch. And the title explains the rest. It's basically things we've been talking about for decades, but now record it and make our friends listen. We now both cite you guys a lot as our experts. Oh, golly. There are so many other better experts.
Experty experts.
We'd like to advertise on my pod. Can you please send us that information? I don't know what that means. Write to us again, Carol Ann, and explain that question.
Are you saying you want to advertise your show or you want advertisements on your show?
I don't know.
Neither of which we have very good information about.
I don't know how that works. This is from Catherine. Illusions dashed, she says.
No.
I had thought/hoped that the name of the linoleum knife was a reference to Hannibal gutting Will Graham at the beginning of Red Dragon with a linoleum knife. Well, you know, I mean, that did happen.
I once wore...
We appreciated that very much.
I once wore our T-shirt on a recap of Hannibal on What the Flick, and people completely misunderstood what it meant.
Yeah. It could also be a reference to the Cronenberg film Eastern Promises, where...
Oh, that's right.
Where...
Viggo Mortensen.
Viggo Mortensen nude battles a guy with the linoleum knife.
True.
But it is a reference to the
Mastodon
Aqua Teen Hunger Force : movie film for theaters. Yes. I also did want to ask about the treatment of women in Ghost in the Shell. I saw the trailer during a feminist brainstorm and was enraged by the amount of time Johansson spent in skin-tight outfits. So is this a good female empowerment movie, or is it just an opportunity for people who swing that way to drool over her? Oh.
More the latter, I think.
I mean, she's... It's...
She's a robot?
Oh, God, Ghost in the Shell.
We have several Ghost in the Shell letters in the pipeline. I hate to break it to you.
Let's just call Ghost in the Shell blanket problematic. In all ways. Yeah. It just is. Love to you both, especially to Alonso, who does deserve more praise.
Thank you, Catherine.
I think it's true. You do deserve more praise. But you know off the mic, I'm giving you praise every day in your damn life. Telling you how great you are. Telling you how cute you are.
And I you.
Yes. This is from Julius. Hi, guys. I'm writing into Second Dave about loving Trainspotting 2.
All right.
The movie feels like a sad rehash because it is about men's midlife crises, where they rehash their youth in the hopes of reviving their old passions. The year after Trainspotting came out, John Cusack went into his youthful reconciliation phase with Gross Point Blank, a movie about a man returning home for his 10-year high school reunion. After having left Gross Point, Michigan, 10 years ago, Cusack returns to deal with his youthful indiscretions, standing up his prom date, leaving his family behind, abandoning his friends, while taking stock of his current situation and figuring out the future, including whether he wants children and whether he wants his temporary job as an assassin to turn into a unionized career. There have also been a fair number of films where older men return home to relive some misguided adventure of their youth, only to learn that you cannot recapture that youthful devil-may-care passion that once was.
There have indeed.
Boyle's T2 is the only sequel I can think of where a protagonist returns home to deal with the wreckage that he left behind. Renton and the gang recreate or reference their original stories in a sad, failed attempt to recapture that magic, with the sad, self-pitying knowledge that they're too old for this and that they should have just moved on. And really, they need to move on for the sake of the next generation. Begbie's college-aged son and Spud's two wee ones. In memoriam of the now-dead Tommy, they go back out to Laith, where Renton originally delivered the "It's shite being Scottish" rant. This time around, Sick Boy delivers a speech about how this whole endeavor is a sad attempt at nostalgia, trying to recapture lost glory. Similarly, Boyle's usually slick direction reflects this sad attempt to recapture their youth by recreating scenes in shoddy or shady ways. Spud's speed-laden interview is reflected in the sex-avoidant pitch to get money to turn the hotel into a brothel. The use of a projection of running horses during their heroin trip is a sad attempt to recreate the abstract zone of the original film. Anyways, Alonzo's feelings that T2 was a boring retread of the original movie is, in no small part, one of the points of the movie.
I hear you.
And to me, it almost operates as a rebuke to the current cinematic landscape of reboots, rehashes, delayed sequels, prequels, and no-quills. This isn't to say that middle-aged people can't be cool, such as us. Come on. How cool are we?
We're so cool.
We're pretty cool.
Please.
But they usually can't recapture their original youth and should move forward with new indiscretions. I believe in that. I commit indiscretions daily.
In that someone tells you a secret and then you spill it?
Excellently. Love listening to the show. I make time for this podcast every week, whether or not I'm doing podcast-compatible activities. I'm kind of surprised we haven't heard more stories about Dave getting excessively grumpy with talkers or texters lately. We need more of those. Well, okay, it did happen. At King Arthur.
Funny you should ask.
I just didn't talk about it because, listen,
these are all variations on a theme.
These are all variations on a theme, exactly. And also, I don't want to be the person who thumps his chest and recounts his every, you know, I was the hero of cell phones, you know.
Assume that every month or so, there's a situation occurs.
Somebody does something bad with a phone in the theater and I yell at them.
Yes.
And that is what happened at King Arthur. And the person tested me by not immediately turning off the phone and leaving it in the seat, in the neighboring seat, with the light from the screen shining straight up. At that point, I said, "Make the light go away." This person got up and left. So
good.
I made the entire situation go away.
There you go. I shut
I'm
down.
I'm sure. Here's the thing. I'm sure this person thinks that I'm a bully.
They started it.
Yeah.
I shut down somebody at Alien Covenant, but I said, please.
I don't say please.
And they immediately crumbled. So
no time for please. this is also from Catherine.
Ah.
Hi, guys. I want to recommend a movie to you. Happily, hearing you discuss going in style reminded me of going to see Golden Years. I don't know this. It is also about elderly people whose pensions disappear and they turn to bank robbing, but it is hilarious. Unfortunately, it had an extremely limited release over here. I don't know where...
I think she's British.
I don't know where over here is.
I believe she's in the UK.
Okay. It is set in Bristol and the surrounding villages, and my local cinema in a town 45 minutes away from Bristol was only showing it in the two matinee slots aimed at the over 60s. So it might have never made it to the U.S. I don't think it did.
I don't think it did.
Yeah. I know the comedy works across generations, and I was not the only under 30 who was also crying with laughter. But I've no idea if it works across cultures. You know what? Comedies from the UK, they play pretty easily over here.
More often than
like,
not, yeah.
Words are a barrier sometimes. Like, y'all have crazy names for things, and so do we. Mm. And if you see enough films from the other country, you get to know what those words are. Also, it helps if you have friends from those other countries that you can Google or text and say, I'm sorry, what are you people on about with this? I do this constantly.
No, I remember...
I have friends in other countries, and when I hear the word, I have a lot of friends in England, and I'm always texting them saying, I don't understand this. Translate, please.
I remember in the pre-internet years when I started watching Absolutely Fabulous, whenever I would encounter a British person, I'd be like, yeah. Oh, I have a list for you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What's right. this? What's this? What's this? Who is this?
Yeah. I remember very, very distinctly early in our relationship explaining to you what the Black Box song Ride on Time was because Eddie sings it in an yes. episode and you didn't understand what she was singing. And I said, she's saying Ride on Time, Ride on Time.
Yeah.
And you said, what's that? And then I played it for you.
It's in the...
and I have played it for you for the
ever
last
since.
22 years.
Yeah, it's in the Pet Shop Boys song.
Yes.
She does Ride yeah. on Time, Ride on Time.
Yeah. P.S. I used the extra day between podcasts to finish Exile in Guyville. Oh.
No.
The book that I wrote in 2006. She says, which also regularly had me in paroxysms of laughter.
Ooh, good word.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I don't know what is funny in that book anymore because my eyes have been in front of it too many times.
You even read it out loud for people. Exile in GuyvilleBook.tumblr.com.
Okay, we're running close to, hang on.
How is this so
Mr. Ross.
Of course.
Has returned. Ghost in the Shell, my 2 cents. The main character in Ghost in the Shell says that she has an American father. Now, this is in the original anime.
Uh-huh.
Says that she has an American father, which makes her at least half Japanese. Look, dude, I don't know. I just don't even know. I don't even have any words anymore. Like, they're sure, that is the anime character, I guess. Like, and I know, I mean, I've seen it. I guess I remember her saying that. I just...
you don't want to talk about it anymore.
This movie is such a pain because it's so wrong.
In so many ways.
In so many ways. It's like it's whack-a-mole with this movie. Like, there's too much that's stupid and wrong about it. The only good thing about it is that it looks great.
Yes.
Which we've been over.
Yes.
and in the end of the animated, movie, they put the major in the body of a young girl.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's not creepy.
P.S. Yes, Dave, Mandy Patinkin is Papa Smurf. Growl. I'm telling you, it's true.
One of the few people that liked that movie for some reason.
Adam. Adam of the Sourdough Starter.
Oh.
The Gift of the Sourdough Starter. On your suggestion, I saw Paris 559, Teo e Hugo,
uh-huh.
when it played in my city. I loved it. such a perfect little film that got absolutely no love, even from other LGBT sites that I follow. I was wondering if you have any suggestions for other films by the directors Ducastel and Martineau. The Adventures of Felix.
Yeah.
Yeah. And similarly, do you have any suggestions for André Téchiné? Why, yes, we do.
Why, yes.
Last year's Being 17.
Well, no, he continues.
I went and saw Being 17 on your recommendation, and I similarly adored it, and it similarly got zero love. Though it's on Netflix now,
cool.
I've been telling my friends to watch it. Oh, yeah, please do watch Being 17 if it's on Netflix now. It's a lovely little movie about two teenage boys coming to understand their need for each other.
If you want to see other great Téchiné, I would definitely say Wild Reeds.
Yeah.
Ma Saison Préférée.
Yes.
And The Witnesses.
Yep.
All really good.
And Thieves.
Thieves is good too.
Les Voleurs.
Les Voleurs.
Voleurs.
Well,
I don't know how to say French.
There's
things.
An S, but you don't pronounce it. So
okay.
It's Les Voleurs.
All right. Okay, we're done.
Okay, fine.
That's not all the letters you sent me, but.
All right.
We got it. We
Fair
have.
Enough.
Listen. We've been invited to a friend's home who's making
muffaletta.
Yeah. And she makes all her own everything.
Yeah, it's going to be
the
great.
The bread and the you name it.
So
we have to leave you guys.
Thanks for tuning in.
To go get fed.
If you discovered us from Pop Rocket, welcome. We hope you'll stick around for more of this stuff. And thank you to all of our wonderful Patreon members. And if you aren't one, you should go to patreon.com/linoleumknife.
Let me tell you something.
Oh, yes.
Right now.
We're at an interesting place.
We are 4 new subscribers away from 300 subscribers, which would be a milestone for us.
Totally.
We are tiny potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
We are a little
fingerlings.
We are a small potatoes podcast. We are not a fancy big podcast. Having 300 subscribers is magnificent, a miracle to us. We have 296 subscribers. So here's what I'm telling you right now. 4 people listening to this show, y'all got to go subscribe at that $4 level where you get LKTV, or at that $7 level where you get LKTV plus the ridiculous food podcast that we do now called Linoleum Knife and Fork. 2 film critics with a food podcast.
Yes, why not?
It's better than you think.
Yeah, sure. And if you want to go higher, great, do it. We're not going to stop you,
but
you know.
Seriously.
4 and 7, those are real.
I have a thing about round numbers. Now, 296 is a round number, but all it does is make me salivate for the number 300.
Yes.
Like, I need...
Lying in wait.
I need 4 people to subscribe because it's interrupting my sleep. That's all I have to say.
Alrighty.
Do it.
Go check it out. Patreon.com/linoleumknife. So thank you for listening. Check out all of our friends on the internet. Go to blutopia.com, BLEUTOPIA, and find out more about the guy who composed our wonderful theme music. And thank you, Blue, for that, as always. Go listen to, as we mentioned before, Bibbs and Whitney on the B-Movies podcast and Cancel Too Soon, and they've got their own Patreon going these days. Check out the Schmoes Know and Dennis Enun with
and
Dennis
William
Hensley.
Bibbiani is a heterosexual white man.
But don't hold that against him.
I love very much.
Dennis Enun with Dennis Hensley, The Comics Canon, The Sewers of Paris, The Joel Ryan Thing. You know, I don't know. Actually, Joel.
She doesn't do that show
anymore.
You got to take that off your list.
She's running for like political office or some stuff.
Yeah.
Oh
my God. Another sex bot following me on Twitter.
They're everywhere. The Criterion Cast.
And you know, they always retweet the same thing. All the bots have latched onto this one tweet that they retweet, and it's always, you know, a woman in a bikini, and her thing is always like, come F me right now.
No,
like,
charming.
No, darling.
The Criterion Cast, Fat Guys of the Movies, Film Spotting SVU, and Secretly Timid. Visit us on the internet. We are at Linoleum Cast on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. You can subscribe to this show for free at iTunes, and it would be really great if you left us a review there because it
5-star only.
It makes all the difference.
I don't have time for any less than 5 stars.
We're on the charts. The iTunes chart for film and TV podcasts.
Oh, that's a thing?
Yes, they do a ranking, and we're like, you know, You gotta dig a little.
What's our number? Where are we?
I don't have it in front of me, but it's...
Where are we at?
I don't remember.
Come on.
We're... I don't remember. They list like 200, and we're at least like...
Are we in the top 100?
I'm not sure.
Are we in the top 200?
We're definitely in the top 200.
That's enough for me.
Yes. So hooray because for that.
There are 200 film podcasts in Los Angeles.
True.
So that means someone is listening besides the 3 dozen people that I know.
Right. And someone's right behind us. That's what matters. You can also...
My Twitter situation just improved.
Uh-huh.
I just blocked the sex bot.
Okay.
But I just got followed by someone who refers to themselves as a non-binary, gender-fluid, gay and lesbian and bisexual potato.
All right. So they're small potatoes, too.
I, too, am a potato. Well, our podcast is Small Potatoes. I'm a giant russet potato, actually. It's nice to be followed by a fellow potato.
You can also leave us positive feedback at all the places that we stream, which include Stitcher Radio and TheLounge.com and CastBox and Podbean and Satchel and some other stuff.
Right.
You can drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with questions, comments, top 10 lists. It's also where you can PayPal us $22 for our t-shirts. Black t-shirts with linoleum knife in white letters.
Yes.
Let us know.
We got all your sizes. We got lady sizes, too.
Yes. And if you are outside the U.S., email us first and let us know where. We'll tell you how much extra for postage. But if you are in the 50, it's $22 for the shirt and for the sending. Just tell us what size you want and where you want us to ship it. And I'm off to Atlanta tomorrow. I will be back, and we'll be back on our usual schedule once I return.
Yes.
And thank you to everybody who sent me birthday greetings on Facebook.
Yep.
It made turning 50 a little less awful, and
oh come on, it wasn't awful at all.
No, it wasn't awful, and I'm totally great with being 50 now.
It's fine,
and in my 50s, and
being 50 is
groovy. In the back half of my life. What the heck? All right, so we'll catch you guys next time. Thanks for listening.
Goodbye.